Man, I wish I were listening to some music right now. Oh, wait. You're listening to WONY.
If we continue to consume our natural resources at the rate we do now, by 2050, it could take 3 Earths to meet our needs. The Earth can't speak up when it needs help, but we can. Be the voice for those who have no voice. Visit worldwildlife.org.
Hey, everyone. You're listening to the WONY Weekly Update. Here are some upcoming events to look forward to. On Wednesday, February 11th at 3 p.m., head over to the Butternut Valley Room for art and advocacy poster making. On Thursday, February 12th at 5:30 p.m., join Adios for their Corazones y Colores San Valentín-themed event in Fitzell, Room 303. On Friday, February 13th, starting at 10 a.m., join WONY for our World Radio Day tabling happening in the Hunt Union Lobby. Also on Friday, join Milne Library for their For the Love of Books event from 2 to 4 p.m. in Milne 102A. In Dewar Arena, watch women's basketball as they take on New Paltz happening at 5:30 p.m. And stay after to watch men's basketball as they also take on New Paltz happening at 7:30 in Dewar Arena. On Saturday, February 14th, happening in the Hunt Union Ballroom starting at 5 p.m., watch the Threads of the Diaspora African Fashion Showcase, presented by the Pan-African Student Union and the SUNY Oneonta Heritage Language Institute. This has been your WONY Weekly Update on WONY 90.9 FM Oneonta. More information about these events and more can be found on Campus Connection. Have a great week. Keep it locked. Stay warm out there. Hello, everybody. This is Leaves in a Bag. I'm joined today. This is like an impromptu episode, I guess you could say. Jesse, we weren't supposed to be here today.
No, we were not.
We were supposed to be out visiting our friend who goes to Lehigh, but that didn't end up happening. And instead, we actually have another friend of ours visiting instead.
Hello. How's it going? I'm Nick. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think we're just going to really yap for, you know, maybe an hour, maybe a little less. We'll see how we feel. And then we're kind of just going to play whatever music we're feeling in the moment. So, because we didn't really plan for anything.
Yeah.
Maybe there'll be like a love song or something in there. I don't know. It's Valentine's Day.
Oh, it is
Day.
Valentine's Day after all.
It is. We got to like theme it, I guess.
Yeah. I think that speaks volumes that like we all kind of forgot that today was Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
That's okay.
But thank you guys for having me. This is really cool. Like, yeah. This is awesome.
It is
Nick,
cool.
Nick, I want to talk to you about, because for anyone who's listening, Nick is a film student at Emerson, and you just recently were able to post one of your films onto YouTube.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I haven't watched it yet. Mm-hmm. And I've like, even before, because I know this film has been made for a year now. How long has
it? I finished it last February, so it's just about a year old now, yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't seen it. I've only seen, like, a couple stills that you showed me one time. And what's the premise? Can you sell me the plot of the movie?
Basically, it's kind of two stories. So there's an A plot and a B plot going on. I call them plot one, plot two, because they're both equally significant. But it's like one of them is two guys. The film revolves around this place in New Hampshire. It's called Waterville Valley. I never name drop it in the film, but Jesse has been, and it's awesome. Would love to take you guys at some point. It's really beautiful. It's a really small town in New Hampshire. It's gorgeous, especially in the autumn, which is when this is set.
Yeah.
Story one is we have two high school old friends who are in college on like a fall break or whatever. They're coming up. They're kind of reuniting. And then one night they kind of have a drunken moment of like romance. And that gets very weird for them because they didn't think of themselves like that at first, or as being gay or bisexual. They kind of grapple with that. Plot two is this maybe high school freshman aged girl comes up to visit her dad, who she hasn't seen in many years because he's been in prison. He was an addict. He's kind of rebuilt his life. He runs the general store. But they've never really known each other in a good way. So that's happening at the same time. And then at some point, the daughter meets one of the guys, and the guys meets the dad. Mm-hmm. And they kind of talk. They just talk about their problems, and they go their separate ways. So they kind of interconnect right in the middle. Basically, that's what the film's about.
I mean, that sounds like I'm sold. I'm very interested.
It's great, visually and like plot-wise?
I would say I'm definitely past the honeymoon phase for the movie. Like, I'm definitely looking at it. There's some couple scenes where I'm like, oh, my God, I can't watch this.
You have a more
this.
Critical eye
I'm like,
now.
Oh, yeah. I can't watch this anymore because it's cringy.
That's just, like, how it be, though.
Yeah. But, I mean, when I showed you guys, like, I was still in the honeymoon phase. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And then now I'm like, oh, yeah, I could have definitely written that way better.
You wrote and directed the movie.
I would say I wrote about, like, 60% of it.
So you, like, co-wrote it?
I co-wrote it with a friend who helped me a lot with the second plot line with the girl and the dad.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Hannah if there's somehow listening. But, yeah, I the story was for me. I co-wrote it. I directed it. I have a tiny little cameo role. I have two lines.
Yeah.
And I did the editing.
Wow.
Did the editing.
Editing.
Very unexcited voice went about low there. That part.
Not editing was not a fun phase. Not a fun phase at all, editing.
Yeah. The process of making the movie was really fun. I guess we're talking about this now. The process of making the movie was really fun because it was a really big project. I knew when I was writing this that I'm like, I'm just going to write this until it feels natural that it finishes, and whatever length that is, I'm just going to make it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to limit myself to, like, a short film. And
so how long did it end up?
It's 39 minutes and 15 seconds precisely, just about 40 minutes. So it's quite long, and that's part of the reason that it's had some mixed success at film festivals, because it's really hard to screen 40-minute movies. It's like, there really kind of is no... Jesse, you just hit your head.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no... Like, 40 minutes is, like, a weird...
It's an awkward gray area, for sure.
It's an awkward gray area of a movie.
Yeah.
Because I think feature lengths can start, like, right around then. But then, like, short films also, like...
With a feature length, you expect at least an hour, right?
I think yeah, 60.
And then short films, when once you get to 30 minutes, it's like, is it really a short film anymore?
Yeah, like...
Yeah, it's like a mid-film.
Yeah,
it's a TV episode.
I've been calling this a short feature, so I guess that's kind of what
I've been talking about.
I definitely wanted to experiment with more feature-like aspects, especially in terms of camera work, pacing, mm-hmm. editing.
Which
it's more deliberate. It's not quite as, like, snappy, mm-hmm. how short films have to be. I'm experimenting with feature-length pacing and feature-length cuts, kind of the kind of scenes that you expect more out of a movie that is over an hour runtime.
Mm-hmm.
But the making of the movie is fun. So I knew it was an ambitious project from the start because I wrote it and it's like 35 pages or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of locations. There's only a cast of four, really. Only a class of... And then there's, like, a tiny handful of, like, minor characters that have, like, one or two lines. But mainly it's four cast members who are amazing and I would love to work with again. And I am working with one of them again.
Which?
Armani, the very tall person. The very tall guy.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. Okay. He has glasses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He seemed cool.
He is cool. But I managed to assemble a crew. I got a very, very good director of photography or cinematographer for the project. And we very much shared a vision in terms of how it visually looks. I think that's what I'm the most proud of out of this movie.
Is the visuals.
I think from a filmmaking skill standpoint,
mm-hmm.
it's definitely very, very strong. And I think I'm very, very proud of how it looks, how it sounds, how it's edited. I think the music is quite solid.
The technical aspect.
The technical stuff, I think we nailed. Me and Garrett scored it.
Okay.
I came up with most of the themes, but then for half of it, I was like, Garrett, do some cool, like, country-y, like, some bluesy riffs, and it really worked. It's very minimalist. The whole movie is quite minimalist, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now exploring an experiment, breach out of, like, less is more. Now I'm trying to think about more is more, like, what can I stuff in to end up a thing. But we basically brought 16 people up 2 hours to New Hampshire from Boston. That's 4 cast members, 12 crew members, plus a couple people who are helping out. My parents helped. There's a couple other people. And we just shot there for 2 weekends, and it was a blast. We had some crazy days. I remember the second to last day, so day 5, I woke up at something like 4-something in the morning because we had to catch the sunrise. It was a skeleton crew, meaning there's only really me, the actors, the director of photography, like maybe an AD, and that's about it,
mm-hmm.
And a sound person. And so we just wrangled all those people
skeleton
up at like
crew.
5 in the morning. It's blackout. We went to this, like, really cool view. We waited for the sun to rise. It was really threatening to rain, which was really scary because, mm-hmm. like, this is really our only chance to do this. And then we got it, and it's beautiful. And then I took a nap, and then we continued shooting at, like, 11 a.m. Went to a highway and we shot a couple things. Then we went inside, shot a bunch of scenes. And then we had quite a long dinner. And then at 8 p.m., fireworks were going to go off in town. Like, we scheduled it to be filming at a place to see the fireworks. But we hadn't actually figured out what place that was. We didn't know what, like, where the location of where we were shooting was going to be.
You just had a spot booked.
So we had to, like, basically I spent all of lunch just, I was off dinner walking around with my dad trying to find a spot. And then we found it. And we moved everyone there. It was so cold, but we caught the fireworks on camera. It was gorgeous. And we didn't pay for them. So it's really good for Indian filmmaking. And then we shot another scene after that back at the place where the view was over, around a fire. It's a real fire.
Oh, is that like one of the first scenes?
That's one of the first scenes.
Oh, but you filmed it. Damn, that
so
was...
So that was probably like...
It was a very, very long
like
day.
Like a 12-plus hour day.
And there's a lot of breaks in between. And for the first half of it, I made sure to be... I was trying to save work on most of the crew. Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't going to call all the crew at four. Like, there's no reason
to do
that.
Like, you skeleton crewed it for a reason.
And I honestly, I think, because that scene, that's the last scene in the movie was shot at the sunrise. And I'm not going to spoil the movie. You'll see it tonight or whenever you're going to see it.
Mm. Either tonight or, like, tomorrow morning or something.
I think actually having skeleton crew really worked for what's going on with the actors in that scene. I think having it be very quiet out, be very tranquil, really helped... bleed the emotion a bit, but yeah, that's the movie.
Wait,
and it's finally
crewed for like the scene, like the very beautiful
At the end.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the sunrise one. But the movie's out now. Finally, it's done to film festivals. I could just release it on YouTube, and I'm finally moving on. I'm working on a new project now, but I don't want to talk about myself for the entire podcast. So I feel like I want to transition the conversation. But this was fun, yeah, and it was a great project. And it's very frustrating always making a movie in a lot of ways. It's just nightmarish how much work you have to do. You have to wrangle it together. There's going to be like 3 or 4 points in any movie you make that's like this is not going to happen.
Yeah,
and then it happens.
Yeah, I worked as like the audio guy for a very short film, like an 8-minute short film, a year ago now. And that was like hectic. And that was probably like even more bare bones than anything you're doing.
Yeah.
And that I can't imagine like everything you got to go through.
One thing that I've been meaning to do is I want to get like some of y'all involved in the movies.
Yeah.
I know Nate, you actually do some film work, but even like you or Lucas or whatever, Jesse, like I would want to get you involved in production somehow. Like if you just want to help out or if you want to shoot some behind the scenes or whatever. It just feels like a whole separate world that I don't ever get to involve you in.
Yeah. Well, that's not true.
When
the remote.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, the remote.
In high school.
Oh, the remote.
And Lucas was involved in was it Rubber Duck?
He was involved. He's been involved.
What
in a couple.
Was that one called?
That's It Was the Ducks. High school projects. These are ancient projects.
It Was the Ducks is actually so funny.
Yeah,
I can't watch it anymore.
I can't.
There's a lot of like there's a lot of high school gold. I'd say that I think nowadays like we look at it and we're like wow like that's. That was clearly something we did in high school. But like, there's still a beauty behind it.
100%. I think so. I know I'm being a little too hard on myself about these things, but it's like, I don't know.
I mean, you're always going to be your own worst critic.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. When I was watching Away, that's the name of the movie, I was just like, I remember me in the edit sometimes, I'm like, I don't want to release this. Like, this is just terrible.
Really?
What am I doing?
Wow.
And then I stopped editing. I picked up editing the next day. And I'm like, okay, this kind of works. This isn't terrible. And then I worked, and then I'm like, okay, you know, this is actually pretty good. And then I'm like, wait, I'm the best. This is the best movie ever made.
Yeah.
And then there's a new problem. I'm like, okay, it's terrible again. And there's nothing I can do.
The creative process is, if your creative process isn't a roller coaster of being like, this is the best thing I've ever produced, to I never want to make this like media again, I feel like you're not doing the creative process.
Especially because the way that the post-production the way that the post-production process works, at least the way that we had it work, I put way more work on myself than I think I really should have. Mm-hmm. I did most of the post-production, which I shouldn't have done. I think I should have just have people do it for me. We could have been out earlier. We missed a deadline for a film festival that I wanted to get into. So, but the way we worked it out is you have to have a rough, basically you make cuts of it, you just make certain cuts. Having a rough cut is very helpful because it kind of gives you a good, like, okay, this is putting it down on the page or on the edit. This is what it looks like, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's basically what a rough cut is. It's minus so many things. It's minus music. It's minus audio mixing. It's minus color. And it's so bad.
It has bare bones work.
It's so bad. And then you have to get stuff with picture lock, meaning everything in the sequencing is locked. Like, you're not going to change the way that it looks. You're only going to change how it sounds or the color. Mm-hmm. So we had to take care of that. Once we added music in, it became like way better movie. Like much, 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 much better movie.
I do think like music is such a key aspect.
Yeah. It really is. People don't give that
enough.
That's
why I like that you score your own stuff. Because you could just be like, this is what I want it to sound like. And it just, I don't know. I think it just gives you a nice little leg up above like other films.
Or just like copyright free music. Yeah. I think, honestly, at Emerson, you find a lot of people actually finding... Well, we're also right next to Berklee College of Music in Boston, so we're
collabing with
you
them.
Can then, in fact, there's a really nice pipeline that's built in to just like, hey, Emerson students need a score. Here you go. Here's like three people who are applying to work on your thing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But I like working on my own stuff because I do enough music stuff that I think I know what I'm doing a good amount for my scores. For this next short film, I want this score, and this is way in post. I can't think about this right now, but I do want to have like a jazz trio or quartet or something, watch the movie and jam over the movie, and that's the score. I really wanted to try that, but that's something I can figure out later.
I mean, that's a really cool concept, though.
Yeah. That's super down the line, though, right?
It'll be fun. Yeah, that's going to be like next semester stuff I'm thinking about, because we're shooting in April somehow. We'll make that work. But besides filmmaking stuff, I'm very happy to be here. It's really cool to be on the radio. And I'm very happy to be like sharing music out in the world with you guys. Because
that's the most fun part about
it. It really is awesome.
I think there definitely has been this decrease in like original work, I guess you could say. And I feel like radio is like a huge aspect of like keeping very niche or like more underground stuff alive.
What do you mean by original work?
I just feel like a lot of times when it comes to at least like large corporate stuff, we'll say.
Yes, yeah.
That there, it's a formula and it's very formulaic and it's getting to a point where like movies are starting to blend together. Mm-hmm. The greatest example I can think of off the top of my head is like have you ever seen that meme of it's you know, The Rock and like five, it's a him in five different movies, but it's the same outfit, in a jungle.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, actually crazy.
I think we're just getting to a point where a lot of corporate and like very high production stuff is getting to that point. And I don't think all of it is like that. But I do think there is this need to keep like small business art alive.
What I will say is I think, and maybe this is just me coping and deluding myself, but I think we're seeing a pushback.
I think we are finally seeing
against the corporatization of everything and the how everything's just slop. There's pushback to AI we're seeing.
Yeah. I'll get an AI video that's clearly AI, but then all the comments are just like,
this is terrible. Yeah, exactly.
And like shunning the person for even posting
and
it.
And even when it comes to like technology, like I'm seeing a larger number of my peers, and this includes myself, who really want to disconnect, who are trying to like get off social media.
Yes.
Who are trying to, I remember you were mentioning you wanted to get a dumb phone. You wanted to get a flip phone instead of a smartphone, like an iPhone, because it's less distracting. And I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah.
what sucks is you kind of need Instagram sometimes.
Yeah, like especially as like a person who creates art.
Art, need to promote it. You need to market it.
Yeah.
And marketing stuff really makes me want to bash my head into a wall because I hate marketing. I hate marketing my own stuff.
Yeah.
It feels so soulless to me. That's why I get other people to do it for me at Emerson for free, because you're never going to get that ever again in your life. So.
Yeah, well, because there definitely is a part about like marketing yourself that feels egotistical or selfish in kind of a gross way sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, not speaking from experience necessarily, because I'm not, but like it's probably a common thing for like artists to feel like, oh, do I have ego? Because, like, art, we talked about this, like, art is, like,
it's the most, like, egotistical thing you could do.
Yeah, it's like, this is my vision.
My
like,
vision. Listen to me.
It. Yeah.
Here's my idea.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it is ego. And I think this is something I'm trying to think about. Like, in a sense, I'm trying to improve myself. So it's like, I think there's a couple things that I could genuinely drop about myself. I think I'm trying to improve. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to stop interrupting people. I'm trying to stop dominating conversations with this radio is not a good example.
Well, I mean, we're basically,
we're asking
you a lot of questions.
But I think ego actually really helps you with your art. Because number one, it motivates you, even if it's kind of deluding you. Like, it motivates you that you're good and that you can do this.
Yeah.
And that people should listen to you. And also, it can really, it focuses a vision. It reminds you to do it for you. Mm-hmm. It reminds you to do it not to do what other people would like,
yeah.
but to do what you would like, and therefore other people will like. And I mean, honestly, when it comes to my goals and stuff, I know a lot of people. I know some filmmakers who do it purely because art is like breathing to them, where it's like, I need to make this or else I'm not fulfilled. I'm not like this.
Do you feel that way?
To an extent, but like, they do it to share stories. They do it to all these things. I mean, honestly, I do it because I want people to see it. I do want to make stuff that people see. Like, I want stuff to get views. Yeah. I want to actually make theater stuff. I want to become famous. Like, I do. I just do.
Well,
and I don't think that's wrong. I just think it's like, I have to remind myself and center myself that make what you want, and then the success will come from you, not from trying to, like, people would like this kind of film, so I'm going to make this.
Yeah,
I'm really trying to keep it centered on my ideas instead of sort of sell my soul for success. Like, I don't know. I think there's a way through, even if it's not like uber duber fame. Like, I would prefer to be like, I'd prefer to even be like a super small time indie filmmaker who makes good stuff.
Like,
and has a lot of good friends that we make films all the time. Like, that would be great. If that could be my life, I'm super happy. Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, the greatest part of art is sharing it.
Yeah.
Like, there is a beautiful part in making it, but...
I was just about to say something basic as heck.
What?
Say it.
Everybody views it differently. Like, we all know this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that is what's fun about it.
Yeah. That's one of the biggest problems at Emerson College, where I go, is that there really isn't a good pipeline. That's a word I've been saying more than once.
Yeah, you like pipeline.
There's not a really good way to view other people's work besides directly ask them, hey, can I see this?
Mm.
Which is kind of rough, because I feel like I don't know, you see a lot of like the marketing and stuff for other films, like on the Instagrams, on the auditions pages, and then you never get to see the result of it unless you're on that set or you directly ask the person.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because it's like more assignment based than anything?
No, it's not assignment based. That's the problem. Emerson College is, man, I'm starting to realize a lot of problems with Emerson College. I don't want to bash them on air, but I think something they can improve upon is a lot of their film classes. I've had very few films that were class assignments, like. Mm-hmm. Like Away was completely independent. Mm-hmm. That was not for a class. That was not even for a film organization. Almost all the film work that gets done at Emerson is done through some of our student organizations, like Emerson Independent Video, EIV, or Frames Per Second, which is FPS, who are specific organizations to kind of help develop people's ideas outside of classes, but it's all mainly outside of classes.
Mm-hmm.
The one exception that I'm experiencing right now is I'm working on my BFA thesis.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, yes, that is of course for class.
Yeah.
But honestly, besides that, it's all been like that's
independent
what
work.
And then, because if you were to assign more films for classes, you would be able to see that at the end of the semester. There'd be a big critique. There'd be a bit sit down of a really strict screening.
There's no like workshop classes where like the whole point is like to make a film and like slowly work on it. Cause like Nate had like a fiction workshop class where basically he has his own personal projects that he likes to work on, but he would write them for class and they would like workshop it as class. Like they don't have anything like that.
I mean, we do, but the problem with the assignments is that like, in these classes, you're like, oh, here's a little short film to make in 3 weeks. That's nowhere near enough time to make a project of any significance.
Yeah.
Like,
the planning away, alone could take 3 weeks.
Like, shooting Away took me, I started writing it the summer of 2024, And then I finished the edit in February 2025.
Dang.
So yeah. It took almost a year. It took all the better part of a year to make that movie start to finish. And that's the kind of projects that you see more commonly in Emerson. Most of these big projects will take something like a year to make, which is really short in terms of like Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
But it still takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get to – the classes are too short and the timelines are too short to make anything significant.
Yeah.
And so you never end up seeing these really nice work. That's part of why I'm really excited for this BFA because I have two semesters to do this. Wow. I'm starting this semester and then I finish next semester next year.
So you get to work on it over the summer?
Well, most people would shoot over the summer. So I'm working on pre-production. I'm shooting it right at the tail end of the semester. So I'm making it a little harder for myself because I need a specific like on-campus thing to shoot it. But then I have all the next semester for post-production, for marketing, for all these things. And then by then I can come into the class. We can watch it. We can review it. We can see how it is. And I'll get to see all my other classmates' stuff too. And that is exciting, but I shouldn't have to apply to this pretty selective BFA program and then wait all this time as a junior to finally get this stuff.
Just to wait.
It's a little frustrating. It's a little frustrating, but I'm here, so I'm going to continue.
Yeah.
But it was a little frustrating waiting for that to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the greatest issue with that is just, you know, saying like, you know, away taking a year, you know, people are only in college for 4 years. So it's how could you possibly scale that to, you know, work within classes and, you know, screenings and all this other stuff. I could understand how it'd be very difficult. But I do agree with you that I think a large issue, even with, I think, some parts of, you know, Oneonta too, is just that there's a lack of production and sharing that production.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's just a very difficult road to walk.
Yeah. I think, I think the part of the reason I love film so much is because it's so collaborative by nature.
It is.
Unless you're like this tiny, super indie, super niche thing with a little camera and then you're making a little mini doc or whatever, you can absolutely make a film by yourself.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Chances are, to make a better film that goes further, you want other people. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely, I think there is diminishing returns. Like, the more and more people you hire, it's not going to keep getting better by the same proportion. I think the possibilities of what you can do get expanded by how many people you can get on the projects. And I think that's very important. And so this is part of why I have problems with the whole auteur filmmaking, where it's like a film by Christopher Nolan, a film by Alfred Hitchcock, a film by Nick Beeson, even. I have problems with this because it's like, okay, but you didn't do the camera work, you didn't do the lighting, you didn't do the editing, you didn't do the acting. Mm-hmm. You just wrote it and told people what to do.
Yeah.
And I think you're ignoring a giant part of the process, which is the whole point is you collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
When you collaborate with people, it should be two ways. You get inspiration from the people you work with, even if you're the head of the project.
Yeah.
And then that makes the film better, not worse. Or the project, it's whatever, TV, it makes it better, not worse. And I think it's important to have a great vision, of course, and then we see examples of great visions. I don't think that's... But for me, it just feels a little wrong to be uncollaborative or to rather not acknowledge the collaboration that goes into it. And I think... I've honestly never really experienced that problem. I think I've just had nice people who I've been on set with. But I mean, it's absolutely a problem. Directors who are like, you know, cliche, who are like, no, it's not my vision.
Mm-hmm.
Or I have had experiences with cinematographers who just will just start like taking over the set and will stop listening to the director or just do whatever they want, whatever they think is better. That was so frustrating. but I think it involves so much collaboration, and that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the beauty of filmmaking or TV making or anything like that is the collaboration part.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, especially like when you go into, especially like larger movies and you just read the credits and you see how many people had to work on a single film.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane.
Like, think of just for like big budget Hollywood productions, like there's probably a minimum of 60 people just doing like special effects.
Yeah. I mean, well, of course, time out's in the movie, but yes, like, yeah.
But like, and it is kind of crazy that a lot of people like attribute a lot of like certain film successes or certain film franchise successes to individually one or two people.
Mm-hmm. This director or this actor.
Yeah. I'm just going to bag on it because I also just don't love the film franchise in general. But I think Avatar has a huge issue with that, with James Cameron.
Yeah.
I do think, like...
I've never even heard of James Cameron.
Well, then, I don't think that's I think that's less common than... I think most people have heard of James Cameron.
Who's James Cameron?
Director of Titanic, director of all the Avatar movies. He was also an oceanographer. He did, like, some dives into, like, Challenger Deep and stuff.
Really? Yeah. Interesting. He's directed a lot of...
He's apparently a real piece of work. He's apparently a giant pain.
Yeah, he started, like, he moved, he created, like, his own film studio out in New Zealand just for the Avatar movies. And I've heard that he's a little lot to deal with.
I think,
But I think that, like, that's just a good example of, like, people really trying to emphasize how much, like, they think James Cameron is, like, this mastermind behind Avatar when there's so many more like people that put their heart and soul into that project just to get it to look the way it does.
Definitely. But I think one of the things that's a little annoying to make films with the super low budgets is music, because there's so often I want to put it like a track, like one of the songs I've just been listening to in the movie, and it would really fit. It's not like it would ruin the movie if I didn't have it. But I can't put this in because I'd have to pay a bajillion dollars to get the rights to use this song. And I can't pay that realistically unless I have like a lot of money in a budget.
How much like roughly?
It really does. I mean, if it's smaller artists, you could just ask them. And then they might say, yeah, you can. Or like, okay, give me like a couple hundred and then... Then you can use it.
But if you're bigger name...
Oh, like you're going to need thousands.
Thousands of dollars.
Thousands.
Like tens of thousands?
Depends on how big your production is. Depends on if it's the whole song, if you're going to change the song at all.
If it's just like 20 seconds of it.
It costs thousands and thousands because it's first because of copyright. Yeah, which is really annoying. And it's part of the reason why I make my own stuff, because the next best thing is to... Well, I want to make... If I can't have exactly what I want, I'll just make exactly what I want.
Yeah, like...
There's so many tracks. I could probably pull up tracks. I might have a whole playlist about this of songs I really want to put in some films.
You could play some on
there. Songs I just have... Oh, maybe I could. I already have selected a bunch of ones I want to play.
But, I mean, just play whatever you feel like playing when we get to the music.
Yeah, of course.
I will say I've had the same problem too, because where it's not necessarily where I'm thinking of like film writing, but when I'm writing like prose writing, mm-hmm. like there, I do often listen to music from, you know, other mediums that I think I'm listening to this music, and as I'm writing, I'm thinking like, oh my God, like this scene that I'm writing, like visually, I think would go great with this song. But like even fathoming creating like the film for it and then trying to get the money to use the
it's frustrating for sure.
But I have also been leaning more towards writing for animation.
Ooh.
Which I think is really, because I'm a huge fantasy sci-fi mm-hmm. writer, and I think those mediums benefit a lot from animation
and also from money
and from money
that
is true.
I think the hallmark idea of a student project is like, it's a small drama or a small little comedy with a couple of actors who are all 18 to 24.
Or horror.
Horror is pretty easy to make. Horror is pretty common. But stuff like sci-fi fantasy gets difficult because you need to build sets, costume design, production design, which costs a lot of money,
and then you have to worry about effects,
visual effects, finding actors who can realistically play the ages, which isn't always going to be 18 to 24. But that's interesting that you say you want to write animation, because I for a feature writing class we had to write the first act of a feature. Mm-hmm. Like, they weren't expecting us to write a whole 90-page script.
Yeah, because that's ridiculous.
I wrote about 30 pages of of a screenplay that I for something that I what I was intending eventually to be animated if it was ever going to get made.
Interesting.
But I wrote it. I wrote it as a standard, just as you'd write any screenplay.
Yeah.
For even for live action stuff, but I'd be curious to see. I guess I can tell you in a minute. But I'm curious to see what is writing for animation like look like. Is it any different? I imagine there's a lot of storyboarding and a lot of like design that happens while writing.
Yeah. So the biggest issue that I personally have with it is that I'm not a very good artist. I'm a very good visual person. Like, I can imagine it in my head, but mm-hmm. I'm just not a skilled artist.
Me neither.
which is so painful sometimes.
It really is.
But, like, in terms of formatting, if I'm writing, like, the script, for example, like the actual screenplay, it's pretty much to a T how you'd write a live-action screenplay. You might just change a lot of, like, or at least what I usually do is I've changed a lot of the physical actions to verbal actions. Mm. Just so, because if you're a voice actor, like, you know, acting out this scene, like, typically, unless you're doing mocap work, or you're having it, like, traced over, which I can't remember the term for that.
Oh, it's rotoscoping.
Rotoscoping, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, the physical actions don't matter that much. Mm. It's more about, like, the energy and the voice behind it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more voice direction, I'd say. But you do definitely write, typical screenplay, because you do want you're like whoever's reading the so kind of be able to visualize like what it is they're doing.
Yeah.
Because it depends, because a lot of animated film is, you know, developed differently. Like some studios, like they do the voice acting like as the animation is being done. So you're dubbing over like half animated, like very, you know, like 4 frames per second probably, like scenes.
Yeah.
Like very minimalistic, not a lot of detail. Like they're still, you know, doing backgrounds and character design and stuff like that.
I imagine the process of making an animated movie is very difficult, and it's also very different because you can do sort of a lot of things at once.
Yeah.
Like, you need, like, a rough screenplay to start, I imagine, a rough story. But then from there, you can immediately start character designs. You can immediately just start looking back at the script. You can immediately start talking about voice actors, and that can all sort of happen at once. That's the vibe I get, at least. I don't really know.
Yeah,
which is interesting, because if I ever make this, which I don't know if I will, because I will need a lot of money and a giant animation team to do it.
Yeah,
but
I mean, like, I know an animator. I don't know a team, but I know some animators.
We do know an animator.
I know
it
two.
It would be 120 minutes of a film.
Yeah, that's animated. It's a large amount. I do think the one thing that pulled me, I think, to do animation screenwriting is the collaborative aspect, especially as someone who isn't artistic or like artistically challenged, I guess you could say, when it comes to like drawing or painting or anything like that. Like being able to describe to somebody like how I'm envisioning something, and then they kind of take that inspiration and within their own style create an image of that.
Totally.
And I'm like, wow, like that, you know, maybe it's not exactly what I had in mind, but it is fitting the vibe I gave you
100%
is a beautiful sensation.
Yeah.
And I think that's what drove me to want to do animation screenwriting.
I actually haven't thought about that, the potential animated feature, in a while, because I've been so busy with other projects. It's a pipe dream.
Bro loves saying pipe.
Pipe dream, different.
Pipeline, pipe dream.
It's basically about this. It's like a. It starts as a period piece where a kid who just kind of stops aging, and like.
Oh, I think you've described.
And
this
so
to me before.
He's forever 11 years old, also mentally 11 years old, for like.
So he can't like
throughout like the entirety of like America's history since like 1840, and then so he's just kind of going around always looking for his dog who's also become immortal, and then he makes friends. He tries to keep friends, but he can't because he's immortal, and so he has to kind of maintain it, and then. He eventually learns to not be afraid of death and finds a way to reverse the process, and then gets to grow up finally. It's sort of it's like a Peter Pan-esque meets Benjamin Button, but also with like I want like Ghibli vibes in there too. So we'll see. It would be interesting. I've only written the first, but I have the whole thing outlined. Like I can tell you how the whole story would go.
Yeah,
but I guess if and when I ever get that level of success, you will be seeing that movie.
Bang.
And if not, I'll probably still write it because it's always fun to write these things.
I mean, I think the other beautiful thing about just being a writer is that, like, theoretically, like, if there's something that I wrote where I'm like, I could probably never produce this, but I think it is something that could be produced, you could, unfortunately, like, you could just sell the script and then just have no
you
part
could,
of the process.
You could sell it. Also, I mean, also, I'm trying to remind myself of, like, just make it, bro. Like, just write it. Don't worry about if you can do it right now. That's an after you write it process.
Yeah,
I shouldn't be stopped with writing with being like, oh, I can't do this. That's not relevant. Write the screenplay. Hang on to it. Mm-hmm. You'll never know when you might need it years later. And then you could make a couple adjustments, and then there you go. And then you have something that you could actually make.
I mean, or you could even just pitch, like, hey, I have this script from 7 years ago that I wrote. Why don't you take a look at it and, like, you find a production company that is like, mm-hmm. hey, like, we kind of like the idea of this, mm-hmm. But we're going to work, we could workshop more to it.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I mean, I'm stuck in this rudder of, like, not having, maybe not saying necessarily not having time to write, but just feeling like I don't have the feeling to just sit down and just put my head down and write pages
starting,
and pages on pages.
Starting is so hard.
Because I was writing a lot, you know, just this past semester because I was in that fiction workshop class.
Yeah.
And, like, I was writing, like, fourth, 20-page short stories that is pulled from a larger work that I do still need to work on.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, maybe it's just the winter blues or something.
I've been trying to work on or something. I've been trying to work on, as a writer, I feel like it's something that comes less naturally to me. I think, like what I said, I think my biggest strengths right now are my, like, raw filmmaking skills, would mean, like, camera work, communication through camera, edit and music and making it look nice, and also visual metaphors, visual storytelling. And I think writing is something that I want to get. I don't think it's bad, but I want to get up to that same level. And it's tough, but what I've been doing recently, I'm trying to like strip it all back. I've been starting to really, like, even if I have like cool lines, I've been writing a lot of song lyrics. I've been writing a lot of, I've been looking at a fair amount of poetry. And I'm sort of like breaking down the language very to small steps of like, what does this word feel like? What does this feel like? And then from there, hopefully the stories can emerge. Because I think it's one of the biggest faults of the big project, the OA, I think it just falls a little flat emotionally. I think I did my best back when I wrote it in 2024. I could definitely do better now. But it's something I'm trying to nail down, the idea of really getting to know characters, getting that real emotion. Beyond like actor performances and visual storytelling, like in the way the story works, really feeling it out, feeling those emotions, getting these moods set, and not having it sort of, I don't want to be more confused about it. So that's probably going to be, you're going to watch me cringe tonight when we watch this movie, because I'm going to be like, I can't watch this.
Really?
For some parts of this dialogue, and I'm like, oof. Ooh, I didn't like that.
Yeah, dialogue is probably one of the hardest things to write.
I think it's not the biggest obstacle for me. Like, I've never thought about it as an obstacle. It's more the big picture story.
Is that your harder thing, Nate? Dialogue?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, nowadays, like, when I first really got into writing back in, like, middle school, my dialogue was terrible. I could not write dialogue for the life of me. But I could paint scenes very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time just working on my dialogue alone, because that was the thing I thought was, you know, really bad, or at least, you know, subpar compared to what else I was able to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think overall, like, large narrative connection I've gotten a lot better at, character arcs, dialogue, that kind of stuff I've gotten a lot better at. I actually think because I focus so much on that my descriptions have kind of started to fall flatter now.
Really?
And I don't think my descriptions are always terrible, but I do think a lot of times when I'm writing, when I do my initial writes, especially for prose, I leave a lot of description out. Mm. And I go back and I add it in later because I'm very enveloped in just the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good thing to focus on. especially with screenplays, as you know, it's writing, it's very different than writing like a novel or prose, because I'm...
You're showing it with the camera.
It's basically a camera. It's a movie you can play in your head as you read it. And so it's like stuff like, and Nate knows this, like even down to like when to add a new line, like you break it up. Each paragraph should be its own thing.
Yeah. The formatting is incredibly important.
It's very... yes, it is important. It is. But I think what's more important is just making sure you understanding what to put in, what is good for the screen, what is a good story for eventual filmmaking and not. Like, because in a sense, like written stories, novels, prose can go deeper into...
So much deeper.
To go really deep into emotions and describe it and make you feel it through these words.
Yeah.
And so you can sort of... Like, and so you can do all these things. And then with film, it's totally different because it has to be very objective with how you write. You have to write, what are we seeing on screen happen or hearing? And then what do these people say? And it's hard to do that without being corny as heck. So,
yeah, because, I think the biggest difference is that, everyone's always talking about, show, don't tell.
Yeah,
but the benefit to prose is that it can tell you the emotion when it needs to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, prose writing can be like, hey, like, this character is angry. And
all
it
right,
could
what
really
is prose writing?
That's...
It's novel, like novel writing.
Like you expect, prose. Like from a book, if you pick up a fiction book. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what is most prose writing.
I see.
So, like, the benefit to that is you're really able to add like this flowery detail to emotion to really emphasize and make it apparent to a reader, but you can't give that level of detail and explanation visually, I think, sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, it does have to be more objective in a sense that if I had no idea about... If I had no idea what the concept of the scene was supposed to be, like, if going into it, I don't know it's supposed to be, like, sad or angry or what the tone of it initially is supposed to be, I should be able to pick that up within a couple seconds, maybe a minute, depending on how long the scene is, of that tone just from the visual language.
Yes.
And that's very hard to do.
Yeah. It's tough. Something I've noticed recently is I imagined for myself for a while that, like, I'm just going to dive headfirst into filmmaking. I'm going to do pretty much nothing else. I'm just going to... That'll be my career. It's what I focus on. It's all my art. And then I realized a little bit ago that, like, there's no way I could... I need music in my life. Not just to listen to music, but I also play a couple instruments and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to make stuff, even if, like... And for that stuff, I really don't care with, like, terms of success or, like, doing well. I'd rather just put out stuff because it feels so much freer. It's much less...
Like, that's a real passion
project. It's much less limiting. With movies, it can be tough to get out of the mind space of, like, okay, here's what the typical movie looks like. And there's a lot of conventions with movies, which is fine. And you can make great movies that follow conventions.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make great movies that don't, but getting out of that mindset can be a little challenging when all you see is movies that follow the convention.
Yeah.
And so I think music is a much freer medium, and so you can kind of just mess around and find cool stuff, and like, and then that's it, and it's a lot more experimental, and it's something I've been really, really enjoying as of late.
I think the greatest thing about like experimental music is that it's just incredibly more accessible than experimental film.
Definitely. I mean, like, making music is not that hard anymore. Not really.
Yeah.
No, like, if you really wanted to make, like, EDM beats or something, it is incredibly
open
easy
up FL
to do that.
Yeah.
Music still is difficult, like, if you want to be playing all the instruments and...
And you actually want it to sound good.
Yeah, and you understanding, like, truly understanding, like, music theory and how that works. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of artists that don't know music theory. They kind of just, like, feel it out and get... It sounds right
and
to
it
them.
It sounds good. So, like, a lot of the time doesn't, but... music is a lot more accessible, and it's also much more open to me, and that's part of the reason.
Also, like, even just from an equipment standpoint, like, it's significantly
it's cheaper.
Yeah.
It's cheaper. it's more like you can hop back into doing it. Like you can't, like for film, you have to schedule times to do these things. You have to, there's a certain time, there's a lot of deadlines. I'm not saying there's no deadlines in music, but at least starting out, it's all sort of based on your passion and based on your...
Well, also, it's a lot easier to learn audio if you're just alone.
Yeah.
Like, learning how to make film, you can't go out and learn how to do audio and video and cinematography.
Or at least it's very difficult.
Very difficult alone. Especially if you're trying to do it, like, in a very, you know, traditional Hollywood format.
Mm-hmm.
It's just nearly impossible to do it alone.
Yeah. I feel like I think the more I've been listening to music, I think the more I've been trying to find my own sound. I feel like we all have a lot of music influences that are kind of all over the place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to be experiencing that in
about
10
minutes.
Yeah. But I think it's super fun to like, combine stuff. I think some of my favorite artists are, I will always have a natural tendency to enjoy things that are like music theory interesting, like stuff that breaks a little, some of the common chord progressions, conventions.
Mm-hmm.
I'll always naturally gear towards that. So like jazzier stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's an artist that there's no reason that they needed chord progressions that complicated, but they're just amazing. Stuff like that will always get me.
Like
Mid-Air Thief.
Oh, that's a good one.
Have you listened to any of the chords and like, really sit down and listen to... do you know Mid-Air Thief, Nate?
I don't think I...
They were really... he's a really cool South Korean electronic, like folktronic...
Yeah.
Folktronica.
That's a good way to explain
sort of producer, and his production's insane.
Actually insane.
But also, like, music-wise, it's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, if you sit down and listen to the chords of this stuff, especially... You know what? I might play one of them. If you sit down and listen to the chords, it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just going all over the place. It's being super different. I'm a big nerd. That's kind of like with film too. I'm a big technical nerd. So like with camera stuff and with music, I was like, what chord is this? What kind of tempo are we in? I'm very detail oriented,
mm-hmm.
Technically detailed oriented. And which is important, but I also think I'm trying to up my musicality, whether it's in music or in filmmaking, where it's like, how does it feel?
Yeah.
What does it resonate? Where are we basing this off?
Because it's not all like it's not all technicality.
What's the why of it? You know?
Yeah.
And that's a hard question to answer at age 20, and I think I need to relax a little bit. But but I think it's fine. But music stuff is super fun, and I think it's a lot more open. And every time I take a break from my film stuff and do music stuff, I'm like, yes, I can just kind of do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And I don't have to worry. I don't stress as hard about making it perfect. Because also there's a big audience for imperfect music now.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of people who like lo-fi kind of bad production sounds.
Yeah.
And like if the instrumentation's pretty rough, there's a charm to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in film, and I'm not saying there's not lo-fi films. There's absolutely lo-fi films. But it's like... It's the standard person, the average viewer would be put off by shoddy quality stuff.
Yeah.
If your camera work's not great, especially if your audio is not great, no one's gonna watch that.
No one's gonna watch that movie.
Away really improved towards the end, and it was something I was really worried about because the audio mixing was pretty bad towards the start. I'm like, I can't really hear this. The dialogue's not great. I mean, literally audibly, it's not great. Like, I can't really hear much. It's windy. We ended up cleaning it up. But, yeah. But I think the ceiling's a lot lower. Or, sorry, the floor... How do I describe...
Is the floor higher?
The floor is higher with music. Because I think, at least the mindset I have, and I imagine you guys share, is it's like, when you listen to music to listen to what they're trying to say, it's a lot more open. And even if you don't vibe with it... It's a lot easier to not vibe with it, but we're still respected a lot.
Than it is for films.
For films, you kind of like it or you don't like it.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah, because if someone puts on a song that I'm not exactly fond of, I'm not going to be like, hey, turn this off.
Yeah.
You're much more likely to kind of tolerate.
I think a big part of that is just like, oh no, 3 minutes of something I don't like versus
an hour and a half.
1.5 hours of thing.
Or even like 20 minutes of a short film.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a big part of it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess because I've been watching a lot of shorts recently because of class, actually. Cool. So, like, I'm in a documentary class right now. We've watched a couple short documentaries that have been kind of interesting. And when I was in my screenwriting class, it was specifically for writing short film screenwriting. So we watched a lot of short films in that class. And I think for the most part, other than there was one I wasn't exactly a huge fan of, but that was because it was this, like, older, very indie Scottish project. And if there's one thing I knew going into it, but I learned really well, was I can't understand when a Scottish person talks.
I was just there not too long ago, and it's very true.
Yeah, so, I have Scottish people in my family, and I have an uncle who's from Scotland and had a Scottish accent for a long time. And even then, I was watching that short film. I could not pick up anything they were saying.
You needed the subtitles.
I needed the subtitles desperately. And I think that did take out, and that's a sound thing. That's an auditory thing that really took me out of the movie. And it has nothing to do with the production of it. It just has to do with me as a consumer.
Dang.
100%. We should start music soon. Nate, I texted you a song that we can start off with if you want.
Okay.
This is the song I was referencing with the fun music theory in Mid-Earth Thief.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to probably do our break in like our 2-3 minute break in probably 2-3 minutes.
Okay. Again, I've never been on this, so I don't really know how this stuff works.
We take a break at the hour. Okay. So in about 2 minutes, if even now we can start the break now. If anyone has got to go to the bathroom or something.
Yeah, I'm all right, but I'm happy to start the break.
We can hit the break. Yeah. So we'll hit the break. And then we'll come back. Yeah, Nick, we could start with this song.
Yeah, we'll be coming up with music, and the radio will sound like radio.
Yep. All right, so let's go into our break, and then we'll come back, and we could start playing some music.
All right, we'll see you guys in a bit.
All right, keep it locked.
Paint stains on her shirt, she lives inside her canvas. From a different world, she'll put you in a trance. And I've never been so sure, I wanna take her hand. Oh, 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 oh. Purple in her hair, the silver in her necklace. Doesn't seem to care about the time her mess is. Is she unaware or is she just pretending? Oh, 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 oh. Never find a girl like her if you lived a million years. No matter how the tables turn, her voice is all I hear. She's a masterpiece from a painted dream, and I can't believe she's standing right in front of me. A masterpiece, I hope they don't tear her apart. Tell me why I feel just like I'm dreaming. The face she brings to life is all I wanna be. When I look into her eyes, I wonder what she's feeling. Oh, 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 oh. You'll never find a girl like her if you lived a million years. No matter how the tables turn, her voice is all I talk to the moon. I just wish that I could be a muse, and she could be mine too. She's a masterpiece from a painted dream, and I can't believe she's standing right in front of me. A masterpiece, I hope they don't tear her apart. Oh, oh. She's a masterpiece from a painted dream, and I can't believe she's
you touch a room. Just wish that I did, I could be amused. And she could be mine too. Please don't let them tear her apart. Don't let them tear her apart.
Give me a W.
W.
Give me an O. Give me an N.
No!
Close enough. Give me a Y.
No.
That was weird. Anyways, what does that spell? Seriously? You don't know? It's Wony, people. Wony.
That's not even a word!
All right, there's no need to be so harsh about it. Everybody just needs to calm down. You're listening to WLNY Oneonta 90.9 FM, Red Dragon Radio.
Since the start of quarantine, social media users around the world have shared their struggles with mental health this past year. With restaurants and businesses being shut down to the constant number change of COVID cases, 2020 has been a long year for many.